Thanks, Ray. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
All the Rays on a Friday afternoon. Good afternoon. And Ray did the, you know, stood it for Louise today. It's three Rays. Three Rays. There you go. Yeah, 51551 ray at rte.ie on this Friday afternoon. Alison Spittle is dropping in after 4 o'clock for a chat and a few laughs. And Eddie Bowen. Eddie Bowen is a radio historian. And did you know that 100 years ago, August, I think it's August 14th, the very first licensed radio broadcast happened in this country? The broadcast happened from the Royal Marine Hotel in Dunleary. And it broadcast as far as the RDS, which is about, I'd say, what, 3.5-4 miles down the road. But it was a historic event. And Eddie's coming in to tell us about that and tell us about the celebrations, the centenary celebrations of that first broadcast. And we're on celebrations. IKEA, or is it IKEA, celebrates its 80th birthday today. Around the same age as Mick Jagger, who's pictured in the papers today with a very dapper looking suit. He was celebrating his 80th birthday last night in London. And there's a picture of him at 3 o'clock in the morning. He enjoyed himself. Yes, he enjoyed himself. Anyway, back to IKEA. It was set up by Ingvar Kamprad. And he's from Eldarid and Gunnarid. See, that's where the IKEA. So his name, the farm on which he was born, and the village that was nearby. So that gives you IKEA, just so you know. It was founded in 1943. Ingvar was 17, selling goods like pens and wallets. Småland, his home county in Sweden, was heavily forested with stony soil. As per the IKEA website says, hardship bred a tough, resourceful person in Ingvar. And it could make the most out of very little. So to record him for doing well in school, Ingvar's dad gave him a small sum of money, which he used to set up the company. In 1948... 5 years on, he started selling furniture, signalling the start of the IKEA or IKEA range that we know now. High costs and damage rates when transporting furniture via mail order were constant thorns in Ingvar's side. Although flat pack furniture already existed, it hadn't really taken off in Sweden yet. And in 1953, IKEA adopted the flat pack self-assembly product line, which proved hugely popular and is with us today. I think, unless something has changed in the last year, that the Dublin IKEA store has the biggest turnover of any IKEA store in the world. We like our self-assembly flat pack things. I wonder, has Mick Jagger ever assembled a flat pack IKEA product? What would you think? What would you think? No, no, no. They're saying no outside. You could be surprised. You know, I've said this before, and I'm sure a lot of people out there would think the same. I find it very meditative. The whole process of getting shelving units or a bed or whatever and assembling them and just the whole process and then the whole thing of sitting, standing back, putting your hands on your hips and going, I did that. Anyway, IKEA, happy birthday, IKEA. Happy birthday, Mick Jagger. Sarah Jessica Parker, she comes to Donegal. She has a home up there and she's been talking about this year's holiday in Donegal on Instagram. Amongst the many pictures she posted, there's one of cabbage, Irish York cabbage, one of her favourite things about Ireland. Now, yeah, what are your thoughts on cabbage? It's not regarded as the most popular vegetables out there, is it? We used to have it on a Thursday with mashed potato and bacon. And then if you were really fancy, you'd have white sauce on top, or parsley sauce, as we used to call it. Pig's bum, cabbage and potatoes was... it was known affectionately in our house. There's a book that I have. I may have mentioned it before. It's called The Vegetable Bible, The Definitive Guide by Sophie Grigson. And it's a cookbook, obviously, but it's a reference book. So it goes through all the vegetables you could possibly think of. And it gives you 4 or 5 ways of cooking them. And there's a little introduction about the vegetable. So there is, as you would expect, a chapter on cabbage. And what Sophie Grigson says in her Vegetable Bible is that you can cook cabbage 2 ways, very quickly or very slowly. So the traditional way in Ireland is very slowly, and that was that pong. You'd come in from school and you'd know it was a Thursday because you could smell the cabbage I don't know what the science behind it is. I don't know what chemical reaction forms that smell, but it was immediately recognisable and not very pleasant. Anyway, the fast way. Sophie introduced me to the fast way of cooking cabbage. You might try this. If you, I don't know. So it's with ginger and garlic and pine nuts. And you just flash fry it. You cut it into strips and it's delicious. It's delicious. It's crunchy and it's flavoursome. And you can sort of, you can feel the goodness going into your veins. Anyway, that book, The Vegetable Bible, The Definitive Guide by Sophie Grigson. It's well worth having on the shelf if you're into cooking. And if you have a different way of cooking your cabbage, do let us know. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Lancome strike me as a band who like their cabbage. I don't know why, they just do. And congratulations to Lancome. They've been nominated for a Mercury Prize for their current album. It's called False Lancome. And here's a couple of tracks.
To the New York trader I did belong. She was fit for sea, both stout and strong. Well manned, well rigged, well fit for sea. Bound for New York in America.
Hey, they're not scared of a long song. The last track of that album, which is called The Turn, is 2 seconds off 13 minutes. And there's some great trad playing on the album. Where's that one gone? Sorry, hold on now. Hold on. Wrong fader up. Thank you very much. That was me on percussion, lads. If you're out there and you need a percussionist, I'm available. Lancome, good luck in the Mercury Prize. No Irish act, according to our sources, has ever won the Mercury Prize. A number of nominations over the years, but no Irish act has ever won it. Still on music, Cher has launched an ice cream, or she's about to, or has, called Cherlato. See what you did there? Yeah, you did, yeah. Can I have a scoop? It's Friday, come on. Scoop. Yeah. Kylie Minogue is taking up a residency in Las Vegas. She's 55 and she's going to be the headline act in the nightclub Voltaire. It's a new venue at the Venetian Resort in Las Vegas. And her performances are due to begin on the 3rd of November. It's all the rage now. Adele, U2, now Kylie Minogue. The former Neighbours actress will perform tracks from Tension, that's her new album, her current album, as well as songs from her vast back catalogue. And we're going to treat you to a few clips from Kylie's back catalogue. Her first hit, ladies and gentlemen, Kylie Minogue!
Everybody's doing a
'87. A lot of people think that wasn't their first hit, that this was their first hit. But they're wrong. But she was lucky in love, she was, yeah.
Especially for you, I wanna tell you, you mean all the world to me.
How I'm certain that our love was meant to be. You changed my life.
Yeah.
Jason together. Ah, lovely. That wasn't the only duet she did. She went cool then in the mid-90s. She became very cool. And she did a duet with fellow Australian Nick Cave. Great song. There was no stopping her then. She was out and spinning around. Spinning around, move out of my way. I know you're feeling me cause you like it like this. I'm breaking it down, I'm not the same. I know you're feeling me cause you like the mistakes. Her biggest hit to date, mentioned earlier in the week, written by Kathy Dennis. Great song, great video. Can't get you out of my head. Still making the hits. Padam, padam. Now that'd be a fun night. That'd be a fun night. Kylie Minogue in Voltaire at the Venetian Resort. And they've designed the venue so that people can dance at their tables. It's a 1,000 seat venue. And speaking about her residency, Kylie Minogue says the creative team has designed an environment where people can get up and dance at their tables and revel in the night. That's what Voltaire is. And I can't wait to perform in this intimate and exciting setting. Tickets go on sale the 9th of August. Kylie Minogue. I danced with her once. I danced with Kylie Minogue, yeah, when she was at Fela. 1995. We danced. I'm sure she remembers as well. Probably not. It's IKEA. You see, I thought it was like IKEA. I said IKEA in the office. They said, no, it's IKEA. What does the man say on the ad? Anyway, on cabbage, we were reared on cabbage. If you didn't finish your mash and cabbage one day, it went on the pan. Oh, with onions the next. Oh, lovely. Good food, says Gary. I use Rachel Allen's method. Thin strips, tiny bit of water, butter and sea salt. Boil for 2 to 3 minutes. Beautiful. And Sean in Avon Road says, finely sliced, sautéed in butter, add chopped spring onion, peas and white wine and cook away gently until cabbage is the required texture. Never cover cabbage completely with the lid of a saucepan. It causes it to turn grey-green. And you don't want that, Sean, do you? I put a tablespoon of tap water and 20 grams of butter in the frying pan. When butter melted, I add the shredded cabbage and cover. It's done in less than 5 minutes. No smell, just lovely. I also cook my carrots the same way. But add chopped garlic. Joan, thanks, Joan. You can't beat bacon and cabbage. An alternative way I cook it is to chop it finely and steam it in a little water, adding a knob of butter and a little salt. Yum. And Mossy is down in Euros. How are you doing, Mossy? Only way to cook cabbage, into a saucepan, couple of knobs of Kerrygold, sea salt, black pepper. Keep tossing and turning in the butter. Simple but beautiful. Add a few bacon lardons. If you like delish. Granny Bonner, Lord of mercy on her, because that's the way you had to say it down the country. She used to cook her cabbage in the water that she generated from the streaky bacon. So you'd have the cabbage cooked in streaky bacon water. And that's something about that. There was something magical about it. So how do you pronounce it? Wait till I see. I better update this now so we can get the correct pronunciation. As if we should know by now, shouldn't we? Where? Oh, there it is there. Here is the... the UK, but who cares about UK? We're in Ireland. Anyway, the UK pronunciation.
IKEA.
Yeah, that's that, yeah. The Swedish pronunciation.
IKEA.
IKEA, you're right. It's not IKEA, it's IKEA. Just, there you go.
IKEA.
Thank you, IKEA. There you go. I'm married to a Scandinavian. You were almost right. The letter I is pronounced like a long E. So it's IKEA. 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 Just, you go on the M50, and if you're going northbound, you take a left. That's basically it. Right. 515-51 Ray at RTE.ie. I'll tell you about our quiz in a moment, but first.
Yeah, another great vocal performance by Sinead O'Connor in the company of Shane McGowan there, and Haunted. And the documentary Nothing Compares is available on Apple. We were talking about it yesterday. And it's soon to be on Now TV, and it's well worth a watch. And it's a brilliant, I suppose, account of Sinead's life right from the beginning and through all the major things that happened to in her life. And there's some great contributors. There's some great footage that you may not have seen before. Nothing Compares. So if you have Apple, it's there. But if you have Now TV, I think it's going to land over the weekend. Now, because yesterday was yesterday, we didn't get to the quiz. So we have two people from yesterday, and one of them will win a prize, which is a two-night stay for two people in the Hendrick Smithfield in Dublin. It's situated in Dublin 7, just off Smithfield Square. So perfect for exploring everything that Dublin City has to offer. And it's quite a unique hotel in that there are over 270 works of Irish and international street art for guests to explore throughout the hotel. HendrickDublin.ie, and thanks to them for helping us out this week. HendrickDublin.ie, and there's also tickets to the Jemson Experience in with that prize as well. And we'll get to the quiz after 4 o'clock, but right now, quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at RTE.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
5 on 551. Ray, my poor mother would turn in her grave. She was from Selbridge, and the only way to cook cabbage is in the water you cook the bacon or ham in. Yes, that's the way Granny Bonner used to do it. That's Margaret. And somebody else says the only way to cook cabbage is with the bacon or spare ribs together in the same water. So it gives that lovely salty effect on the cabbage from the bacon. Now, the All-Ireland football final on Sunday. Old rivals Dublin take on Kerry. Kerry are the current champions. They beat Dublin last year. So there'll be blue all over the place, and there'll be the green, the gold all over the place as well. And one household in Listowel is going to be divided down the middle. Brian and Kerry are on the line from Kerry. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Ray. How are you doing?
You're a dub.
I am, yeah.
Yeah. Hello, Kerry. How are you?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Kerry by name, Kerry by county of origin.
Exactly.
right. And you are married?
No, we're not.
No, you're
not yet. Anyway.
Yeah, but you're sort of all but married. You have the house and the children and all that sort of thing.
That's it.
That's it. Yeah, we did it that way as well. We had the house and the children, and then we eventually 10 years married this year. Just so you know. Anyway, how many children have you got?
Three: Abby, Lucy, and Daryl.
Right, and Brian, how long are you down in Kerry?
Mostly about 13 or 14 years.
And why did you go down to the kingdom?
Just a change of scenery. I was working up in Dublin there, and I got redundancy. So, because a friend of mine, his father is actually living in, is from the Stall.
Yeah.
So we used to come down up and down when we were kids.
Aha, so that's the connection.
So that's the connection, yeah, yeah. And then after the redundancy, I just said, you know what? I'll move down here, peace and quiet.
Right, and Kerry, you were born and bred in Kerry.
Well, I was actually born in England.
Oh, were you? Right.
Yeah, both my parents are from Kerry, from the Stall. They're diehard Kerry fans, hence the name.
Yes, yes.
But we moved back to Listowel again when I think I was about 6 or 7.
So that makes sense. That's why they called you Kerry.
Yes.
Because you weren't living in Kerry at the time.
Right? Yeah.
Aha, yeah. Aha.
But it's actually quite a popular name.
Is it in Kerry?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Kerry from Kerry, right, okay.
Kerry from Kerry.
Yeah, and were your parents big supporters of the football team?
Yeah, my dad especially. Diehard Kerry supporter.
And he was around during the 70s, of course, when the rivalry between Dublin and Kerry was at its height.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Great old banter.
Yeah, yeah. So what's going to happen on Sunday then?
Well, four of us will have Kerry jerseys on,
right.
And one will just have a Dublin jersey.
And is there any bunting or anything outside the house? No.
No, we had the flags all right, but the last, if there wasn't, not so long ago there was the bad weather.
Yeah.
And the flags, they kind of got a bit destroyed and all that. Actually, I can't get a Dublin flag down here to replace them.
You can't buy, I'd say they're difficult to buy now down in Kerry, a Dublin flag.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I've asked a few places and they've just said, they're difficult to get. They're hard to get.
They've just been nice to you, Brian, I think.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
And then when you leave the shop, the cheek of that man coming in here. And
yeah, no. Yeah, did you hear what he's up to?
Yeah. So your dad, the grandchildren are shouting for Kerry, and that's important.
Yes.
And did I hear that one of your other sisters going out with a dub as well?
My brother is going out with a dub as well.
All right, your brother, right, okay.
Yeah, my younger brother. Yeah.
Right, okay.
So they're slowly moving in, aren't they?
Yeah. But you're living down there, Brian, so you have to, you know, stay stum, really, don't you? You have to keep quiet.
No, I do sometimes, but sure, a lot of people know me anyway, so they get used to seeing the Dublin jersey or the Dublin head walking down the town.
Yeah. How did you meet Kerry?
We met in the night out.
You're talking over each other there now, so...
Sorry, we met on a night out.
Oh, a night out. Anywhere in particular?
Yeah. I can't remember.
Right. Oh, great. It must have been a good night.
It was a great night.
It was down the local.
Right. I'm wondering about the children. So Abby's 11, Daryl's 7 and little Lucy's 3. And were they given any choice about who they cheer for?
Not really on my part. Now, their Dublin cousins did try to sway them.
Did they?
When
yes.
they were younger, when they didn't really get the banter and stuff. But now that they're that bit older, they know who they're supporting. And
it would
always be Kerry. Now, I just need my little boy to play on the Kerry team.
Right.
We might eventually get Brian into a Kerry jersey.
That's what they keep saying. If he's wearing the one, if he play, gets to play for Kerry, then you'll have to wear the Kerry jersey. And I'm like, oh, jeez, I don't know.
Well, that's way in the future. But for this weekend,
in the future,
is there any forfeit or any bet going on? You know, like, for example, Brian, if Dublin win, you know, Kerry has to maybe, I don't know. And then if Kerry win, Brian has to do something. Is there any of that going on?
Well, not that I know of at the minute.
No, but you're after putting the idea into my head. Maybe he'll have to cook for the week or something.
Yeah, well, how do you feel about that, Brian?
Yeah, that'll be all right. The only thing is that the kids would probably starve. So Dublin have to win then.
Right, okay. So obviously there's no point in me asking you two who do you think's going to win, because Brian, you obviously think that Dublin's going to win, and Kerry, you think that Kerry's going to win. Well, listen, it'd be good crack in your house on Sunday with four Kerry jerseys and one dub there in the corner, staying stum. Enjoy it, and thanks for taking our call. Brian Mungie and Kerry O'Connor. See you. Bye, bye, bye.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Pauline has been on to us. Thanks, Pauline. Sky Documentaries is airing Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares, this Saturday night at 9 o'clock. So if you want to record that, if you have Sky. And somebody else says there were Dublin flags for sale in Killarney last week. That's from Susan, another dub in Kerry. She has the flag and the bunting out too. And Niamh's dad has his Dublin flag out. He's out in camp, out in the Dingle Peninsula. So I'd say there's a good bit of that. And there's a bit of it around Dublin as well. People would carry flags and bunting out. Now, this August, we're nearly in August, marks 100 years since the first licensed broadcast of radio ever occurred on the island of Ireland. It was a significant event for the citizens of Ireland and those pioneering broadcasters who aired those first programmes in 1923. To mark the centenary of 2BP on the 12th of August, that was the name of the station, 2BP. So to mark the centenary on the 12th of August, there will be an event in the Royal Marine Hotel in the exact same room that the first ever licensed broadcast took place. Organiser of the event and Irish radio historian Eddie Bowen joins me now to tell us about the origins of 2BP and the spark in Irish broadcasting it ignited. And I suppose the reason we're here today, Eddie, isn't it? Without them, we wouldn't be here today.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. Thanks
had
for coming
start,
in.
Had to start somewhere.
I did, yeah. Now, you're what they call in the business an anorak.
100%.
Yeah. Will you explain to people who don't know what an anorak is?
An anorak is just, in the good old days, I suppose more associated with pirate radio, where you'd wear an anorak and stand outside and you'd be kind of listening to radio under the tree.
Right.
More than likely, you were probably running an aerial up the tree so you could get a better signal. But that's what an anorak is. And I go back into the very first radio I got. One of those great men called Santa Claus brought me a radio, and it just
opened.
What
age were you?
I'd say I was about 6 or 7 when I got it.
So that's 50-odd years ago.
Yeah, it was. We had the old Bush radio in the kitchen, which was always high enough that you couldn't reach to change the station.
And that was probably stuck on Radio 1.
Oh, Radio Ayrton. Yes. That was it. Never moved off it. Then, of course, when I got a little bit older and a little bit more agile, I was able to get up and tune it. And then, of course, I was encouraged. I think I was probably encouraged to look for a transistor radio again. It was just fascinating to me that I had this piece of equipment with batteries, no wires, and I got the world.
Like
languages I never heard, music I never heard, and
it opened up.
It was a global experience.
Yeah, wireless, of course. That's the ultimate expression. Wireless. And as you went down the dial, did you stop at Luxembourg?
I stopped at Luxembourg, and I suddenly found Radio Caroline.
Yeah.
My two great passions in life from radio came from that. It was a huge fan of Meatloaf. First time I ever heard was on the radio. And I became a very big American football fan by listening to the American Forces Network.
Uh-huh.
So I became a Washington fan, and I still am.
And they were all on medium wave.
All on medium wave. FM had not really taken off. FM wouldn't have probably come to the late 70s. Again, probably the pirate era brought in FM.
Yeah.
But it was all medium wave and some long wave.
Right. So you're an expert, are you, on radio in Ireland, pirate radio stations?
Pirate radio primarily is probably my thing. I'm involved in the Irish Pirate Radio Archive out in DCU.
So would you know what pirate radio stations I was on?
Absolutely, down in Kildare, yes. Yes, that caravan, yes.
yeah, that was one of them. That was the middle one. Yeah, I started off on KCR, which is Radio Vinta Kildare, and that broadcast out of Naas. And we had a fertiliser bag over the record decks to stop the rain coming in. That was the first
Needs
one.
Must.
Needs must. Needs and must. Then the caravan out the road, that was WKRC or something.
WKRC, yeah.
And then there was KLB, Kildare Local Broadcasting, which was nearly official.
Professional.
Yeah, nearly.
Nearly professional.
Nearly professional.
You were moving up the ranks.
yeah.
You were coming out of the garden shed and into the living room.
But they were all officially illegal, weren't they?
Oh, 100%, right up until 1988.
Is that when local stations got licenses?
License, yeah. They several times tried to get rid of pirate radio over the years, tried to bring in legislation, and of course nobody grasped a nettle, mainly because nobody wanted to upset the young people who were all listening to pirate radio. So eventually in 1987... Fianna Fáil government decided that it was time to bring in licensed radio. But up to the 1987, like on a weekend, you could have 150 pirates across Ireland on the air. Oh, yeah.
We played a bit of Jim Diamond. I should have known better.
Which reminded me of Nova Care.
It was PhD.
Yeah.
And what was the name of the song? I Won't Let You Down.
I Won't Let You Down. It was for Nova Care. Radio Nova would do their annual charity event, and that was the song that they played.
And did they play it once they were going to be shut down?
They
blasted it out of the windows. And
in 1983, after the raids.
Right.
He briefly came back on to say goodbye. And of course, after a couple of weeks, he was back on full time after the raids were in May 1983.
You do know your stuff, Eddie.
I'm just auditioning for Mastermind here.
Let's go back then, 100 years, 100 years. And of course, there was no radio then.
No, there was no radio, especially in Ireland. Again, you have to remember, we're only coming out of a civil war.
Yeah.
And prior to that, the War of Independence. So it was all...
And all radio broadcasting had been banned.
Well, the military were in charge of, and there was no licences been issued. So you couldn't broadcast anyway, but you couldn't listen either. So you weren't allowed, there was no licensing for listening.
Now, before we get to 2BP, will you describe that situation where the GAA were raising funds and they had this big fair in Croke Park to raise funds?
Yes.
And there was a listening booth or a listening tent.
Yeah, and you paid extra to get into it. And it was probably the most successful event at the fair.
So what was it?
So you literally went into a tent and they had a radio with a couple of speakers on it, a couple of old-fashioned, as you, like what you'd know as the old gramophone speakers.
Yeah.
And they tuned in 2LO in London, and they tuned in Manchester, and they tuned in Cardiff, and 5NO from Newcastle, and they listened to all these English dance bands. And they were just fascinating. Young people were going in their droves. It was music they had never heard.
So they paid a shilling to go in and listen to the radio?
Yes. Yes, and was remarkably sold out on a number of nights that they had it there.
And I was just trying to imagine what it must have been like for them.
Oh, to hear, but it's just to hear this, like A, to hear that type of music, and B, to know it was coming from London.
That's the thing, isn't it?
It was
to know that it was happening there, you know, many, I don't know, 1,000 miles away.
Yeah.
And we could hear it through this.
Yeah, yeah, and through the ether.
Yeah, we take so much for granted, don't we, when it comes to technology.
It was described then as just listening in. There were listening in stations.
What,
so you weren't supposed to just listening, you were listening in. Right. It's almost you were earwigging.
Right.
You know. But these, they were full. Like, I mean, the reports in the newspapers at the time said that the Croke Park one, and there was loads of fates, and wireless demonstrations was used as a marketing tool to get more people in.
Right.
And it was huge. For the Coombe Hospital, they had a fate up in Dolphin's Barn. And probably most of the money from the fate came from the listening in station.
Right. I wonder would you get away with it now? Well, people are saying, "What about the license fee, right?" Right. Okay. So then the government were toing and froing about giving out licences, and they offered up a license for Dublin, Dublin area.
So they had the discussion. I mean, the pressure came on immediately once the Free State had been formed. The pressure came on to have their own licence station, and when they heard that Belfast was going to get one, Dublin wasn't to be left out. Now, there was people listening in. There wasn't in 1922 and probably the early part of 23, there was no licences. But people had radio sets. Dixon and Hempenstall were selling sets.
Dixon
pickets.
And Hempenstall?
Oh, they were the biggest.
Were they? That's where I got my glasses now.
Was it, yeah?
Yeah.
They were the biggest.
That's mad, isn't it?
They were the largest wireless distributor.
Were they?
Hogan's was another.
Right.
And Pickett's, as in McCulloch Pickett's.
Yeah.
So people were listening, but most people couldn't afford. Like, for a lot of people, a radio set was the first piece of furniture in the house they bought. Because when they got married, they were given everything as presents. The bed, the dresser, the cooker. But the first thing they went out and bought was the radio.
And it was a piece of furniture.
Oh, it was a piece of, but it was a luxury thing
to
have.
Yeah.
But a lot of people had the ingenuity then to create crystal sets, which were quite easy to make. So they were still able to pick up the stations in England.
So they were building their own radios?
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, God. Oh, it was, like, I mean, it was probably three times the amount of crystal sets than there was official sets.
So there was a bit of palaver about who should get the licence, wasn't there?
In the end, there was. But at the time, J.J. Walsh, who was the Postmaster General and in charge of the department, or in charge of the post office, the GPO here, the pressure came on to him, and a lot of pressure came on to put on our own radio station, to have our own voice. But he wanted nothing to do with it. He didn't want to be in control of it. So he decided the best option here would be commercial radio. So that means the post office wouldn't have to worry about it at all. You know, all they'd have to worry about was collecting the licence fee. But they wouldn't have to worry about the commercial. They would give a licence out, same as the way as it is today. And that was the original plan. Just to skip over 2BP, in 1924, then they set up, the Dáil set up a wireless committee, and they did to discuss whether it should be commercial or state.
And they went state.
Well, they went state because the committee went into a bit of a political meltdown. There was a bit of a scandal over backhanders and Darrell Figgis, who was the TD, who was involved in it, unfortunately eventually committed suicide over it.
Gee,
in London.
Backers.
Yeah. So it was a kind of a touchy start to radio.
Okay. But so you've skipped on there,
yeah,
now.
So
back to this was a local licence, if you
so,
like.
Yeah, so it was partly to do with a lot of people hoped that the RDS would run radio.
Right.
Because they had a big scientific department and they were respected.
The Royal Dublin Society.
Society, yeah, whose original headquarters, of course, was Dáil Éireann before they got kicked out of that, much to their displeasure, because I've gone through their archives. So they were involved. It was the horse show a week, and J.J. Walsh said to Marconi, "You set up a radio station. We'll see how it goes." So
right.
He gave them a licence for a week to broadcast for the week of the horse show. So they decided to set up the station, the studio and the transmitters in the Royal Marine Hotel in Dunleary. And they sent over a couple of men led by a man called Louis Wilson, who was head of his publicity department in London. And he sent him over to set up the station. And they did. They set it up in the Royal Marine.
To broadcast to the RDS.
Well, so the ideal was to broadcast to the RDS, but anybody within a 50-mile radius could listen.
If you had a radio.
But they set up listening stations in Dixon and Hempenstall and in Hogan's and in town, and anybody who had a crystal set, it was reports from the
loads
paper.
Of excitement. Oh, loads of excitement.
It was huge at the time.
We found this lovely piece. So they set it up and you're going to be there in the room, and you have a lovely book, The History of 2BP. You're going to be in the room, the Royal Marine Hotel, on what date?
12th of August. This is Saturday night.
Okay. And Renee Flynn.
Yes, she was one of the first broadcasters.
And she was interviewed about it in 1996. This is a lovely piece which paints a picture of what it was like back in 1923.
Many years ago, when, oh gosh, I suppose I was, what age would I have been then? I was in my late teens. A party of people came over from the BBC and they started telephone. They got a little, do you remember, am I telling you something? A little room in the RDS. And they went in there and they had us out in the Marine Hotel. Of course, this is implicating a lot of old complications and implicating an awful lot of people. They set up a piano in a room and they had a telephone. And we sang into that telephone in the room in the Marine Hotel in Dunleary for the BBC, who had a little caboose in the RDS. And the people were paying their fourpences or the sixpences or whatever they paid then to go in and put on headphones and hear us singing out in the Marine Hotel in Dunleary. And that was the very first, the beginnings of anybody knowing anything about broadcasting.
In fact, they were the first broadcasters.
They were, but they were not doing it on a wide open basis. It was only between Dunleary and the RDS.
There you go. Now, Rene, who was an opera singer, it wasn't the BBC.
It was Marconi. Yeah. But she would have taught, because the BBC had actually only been instituted in 1923. It became the British Broadcasting Company.
Right.
It was a coalescing of a number of stations in England, like 2LO.
So that was it started at the weekend and it only lasted a few days then, did it?
So they started broadcasting on the Tuesday, the first day of the horse show. So they had put an ad in the newspapers for people to go out to, you know, get in touch with McCullough Pickets if you were willing to go out on the air. This was brand new. Nobody had ever heard of it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were afraid of it. So a lot of the artists that got involved with it were from the Rathmines and Ratgar Musical Society.
All musical acts they were looking for?
All, because sopranos and tenors sounded best on the radio at the time.
Right.
So that was, you know.
Somebody had decided that.
And they particularly really wanted women.
Okay.
Because their voice transmitted better. So that was mainly that. And when they didn't have artists out there, Pickets gave them gramophone records, which they played, which then was listened to in the caboose in the RDS.
And she mentioned their headphones. So
no, it wasn't actually headphones. No, it was just headphones. Big speakers they had there.
And the telephone she describes was obviously a microphone.
But it was, would have been a telephone.
Would it?
But it would have looked like to her a telephone mouthpiece. That's the way it would have been set up in the old days. It looked like literally an old...
Yes.
One of those handsets. And it would have looked like a... and again, even in the pirate days, we used to use the mouthpieces from telephones.
And despite all your recordings of all the radio stations you have over the years, there's no recording of that, is there?
No, there's no even recording. I mean, the only snippet of the opening of 2RN in 1926 is from the BBC.
Right.
And that's of Douglas Hyde. And that's the only, there's no recording made.
And that's us, really, 2RN is us.
Yeah.
So we'll be celebrating 100 years in 3 years' time.
Yes. Yeah, well, basically we're going into a decade of centenaries for radio. So in 23 was 2BP, 24 was 2BE in Belfast, 25 the first test transmissions at 2RN, 26 2RN, 27 is 6CK in Cork, and then in 1933 was the Radio Ireland.
Will you give me an explanation for the B and the P and the R and the N?
So these were call signs, letters handed out by the British Post Office.
Right.
No much choice in it. It was just given to them. The 2BP was actually for Marconi's publicity department.
Because it's not great, is it, as a name?
No, it's not. No,
station.
Well, 2BE.
2BP coming at you.
Yeah, no, not no, really. No, it doesn't work. No. But that was their station. That's what their call sign
and
was.
And RN is, was.
Well, it was originally, it was 2RN, come back to Ireland. Come back to RN. Erin, come back to Erin. So that's why they got 2RN.
Right. Interesting.
2BE was Belfast.
Belfast.
And 2LO was London.
Yeah.
But some of them don't make any sense.
Right. Don't forget that the Atlantic 252 tower was demolished there the other day. Did you see that?
I did, yeah. And Tullamore went as well the day before.
Right. It's some amazing footage from that.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention it the other
day. Yeah.
How tall was it?
243 metres.
See, I knew I could ask him that. He'd blow it off the top of his head. Like, come on.
I wasn't even getting a chance to phone a friend.
Lovely book, The History of 2BP, Ireland's first licensed radio station. Eddie Bone is the author, and you're launching it on the...
We're launching it at the event on the 12th of August, and one of those who will be there will be Lorraine Barry.
And her connection is?
Is her great aunt was the first woman to speak and play on 2BP, Victoria Clark Barry.
Right.
Her father was John Clark Barry, the famous orchestra leader.
There you go.
Who was in the RDS listening to his daughter broadcasting from Dunleary.
And imagine, they were going, imagine that's 3.5 miles and we can hear them from here.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. Insane to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're hard to impress now,
yeah,
aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, the only thing that I can equate it to was the first time I ever made a mobile phone call.
Yeah.
The excitement of that, me doing that, I used a mobile phone belonging to someone else to ring home.
Yeah.
And I'm telling my dad, I'm on a mobile phone, and he couldn't get it.
He couldn't get it right. Eddie, lovely talking to you.
Thanks, Ray.
We could talk about this forever, but we'd have no listeners at the end of it. Eddie Bone, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, it being summertime and with all the summer berries on sale on the many roadsides around the country, we got talking about jam. And Laura Sinnott of Wexford Home Preserves has come in to us today to talk us through jam's popularity. First of all, Laura Sinnott, what's the difference between a preserve and a jam?
Well, a jam is a preserve.
Right, there you go. They're the same thing, are they?
Yeah.
So like, you're just posh, are you? Is that it?
That's it, yeah.
Before we get on to jam, preserves, whatever, have you any strong thoughts about cabbage?
I love cabbage. It's not strong. It's not a strong contender in our house, but I love cabbage. And I do like it, like you said before, fried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something nice about it, isn't there?
It's lovely, yeah.
And slightly brown at the edges.
Yeah, yeah. Comfort food.
Nice. Okay. So how do you make, what's the basics of making a jam? I've never made a jam. I've watched my granny make jam, gooseberry jam, blackberry jam.
Yeah.
Is it just fruit and sugar?
It's just ours is just fruit and sugar. It's very simple.
Yeah.
We continued the traditional recipe when we took over from Tom's Aunt Ellen. So, and all her
Tom
recipes. Tom is my husband,
right.
Sorry.
Okay, yeah.
So myself and Tom own the company, and his Aunt Ellen owned it before us. She established it in 1988. We bought the business from her in 2009. And Ellen came to work with me for a year to teach me the recipes. So it was very simple. It was just fruit and sugar. You stew down the fruit, make it soft, add the sugar, bring it up to between 103, 105 degrees. And that's it.
Right.
Bob's your uncle. Now, there's some jams that are harder to set, like a strawberry jam. So we'd, because it has less pectin in it.
Right, and pectin is the thing that
gives
it its
make
gooey.
It set.
Yeah.
So for that, like, we buy loads of Bramley apples from Ballycross Farm, for example, in Wexford.
I know it well, yeah.
We stew the apples and we add a little bit to the strawberry jam.
For the pectin. So it's natural pectin.
Yeah.
Aha. So it's a strawberry and apple jam, really, but you don't say that.
There's only 12%. But it makes it lovely taste.
Right.
Lovely taste.
So
very natural.
Is there any fruit you can make a jam with?
God, I suppose not. Like,
what's in your range now?
Oh, there's all the basics. So strawberry, raspberry, blackcurrant, blackberry and apple.
Gooseberry,
rhubarb and ginger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Ellen used to make a kiwi one.
Right.
So you hear all sorts, pineapple, then you can add, so like we'd have strawberry and elderflower, raspberry and rose water, got loads. And then the marmalades as well, you can have, like we have a poutine marmalade, a gin marmalade, whiskey marmalade, a grapefruit ruby marmalade,
right.
You know, so it's like, it's endless, really.
Right, what's your advice then now from the picking of the fruit and the type of fruit right through to the storage, etc.?
I suppose if you can make it from any fruit, it doesn't have to be perfect fruit. You know, like the fruit you see on the shop shelves doesn't have to be perfect size and shape, and just whatever you have in the garden, or, you know, into the pot, bit of sugar, bring it up. It's easy.
You could have phoned this in.
I have no special tips, really. Like, I'm trained by eye from Ellen, so there's like, you know, it's bubbling a certain way and I know it's ready to come off, you know, there's all the little bubbles around the side of the saucepan and I know, so by eye, trained by eye.
You don't have some huge thermometer and some timer?
We use the thermometer
there,
as well.
There you go.
Just to be on the safe side, but I never used to for years.
You're just not giving away your secrets. That's what we'll have to get a bright light shining in your eyes to get the information out of you.
No, not at
Tell
all.
Tell me it's about the jam. Tell me about the jam. You're not getting out of here to find out about the jam.
The marmalade is more of an art to it, I suppose, where it's a 2-day process. We work with two family farms, one in Seville and one in Sicily.
Right.
We bring in the fruit just after Christmas. Loads of it arrives at our kitchen door. We wash it. We take all the pips out by hand. We use the pips then to make our own pectin.
Uh-huh.
So we leave the pips soak overnight and you're coming in the morning and you have a natural pectin again. We shred it and then we leave the skin soak overnight. It softens them a little bit. And then we cook it the next day. And that has to come up really high, a marmalade, you know, to get it to set.
And the skin is the coarse bits in the... Is it?
Yeah, no. We use the whole orange.
The whole orange,
or
right.
Lemon, yeah. We use every single bit, so...
And what about, like, there are some people in my life, Tom in particular, who doesn't like strawberries in his strawberry jam. I tried to explain to him, he's only 11.
Yeah.
I tried to explain to him, well, that, you know, the clue's in the title, it's strawberry jam.
Yeah, he doesn't like the pieces.
Yeah, he doesn't like
okay.
the pieces, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
What do you do?
Well, we do like a no-peel marmalade.
Right.
And we do a donut, lovely donut jam for Pettit's Super
which is,
Value.
Which is Blitz,
we have to pulp that.
Yes. So that's the one I should get for Tom. And this is your busiest time of the year.
Yeah, and we're very busy. We take in all the rhubarb. We have the apples coming in. We'll have the blackcurrants coming in. And then we're straight into Christmas from September
onwards. Yeah.
Hampers, we make cranberry sauce.
Right.
Make brandy butter. We do a whole range for Dunstore Simply Better stuff. And nobody gets holidays from September
to
Christmas.
We're not going to stop our love affair with jam anytime soon.
No, I don't think we are. Like, it's a staple, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a staple, yes. I can't get pineapple jam anymore, says somebody.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't a strong seller.
No,
Ellen tried it. So we didn't.
Laura and Tom, a fantastic business and a wonderful product. They're always exceptionally genuine and generous to their local community. Great to hear them on the National Airways.
Oh,
there you go.
Thanks very much.
Laura Sinnott, thank you very much. Wexford Home Preserves.
That's
the name of the business. And you can see them all over the place.
All over, yeah.
Okay. Thanks Laura.
Thanks,
thank
Ray.
You. An Ish Toshin and the Pre Skelton and Oak to the Mora Breed Nikulon. Grandma Good Mora Breed, thank you very much. Have a nice weekend. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. I make my jam, frozen berries, honey, and chia. Is that how you say it? Chia seeds. That's D. A lovely snack is fried cabbage sandwich and white bread. And the leftover bits of bacon, Isidore. That's a nice name, Isidore. Cabbage between two slices of bread. I don't know. It's sort of limp and limp, isn't it? You know. Anyway, we have two quizzers standing by. Yes, we do. And there's a prize. And every day this week, we've been giving one person a chance to win a two-night stay for two people in the Hendrick Smithfield. Ireland's first street art hotel. It's home to a vibrant ground floor bar and outdoor courtyard space where you can enjoy breakfast each morning, and there are over 270 works of Irish and international street art for guests to explore throughout the hotel. Situated off Smithfield Square in Dublin 7, it means you're very close to all that Dublin City has to offer. We're also throwing in tickets for the Jemison Distillery Experience. HendrickDublin.ie. HendrickDublin.ie. Hello, Declan.
How you doing, Ray?
I'm good. You're on your way home to Newbridge.
No, I'm home now.
You're home, are you?
That was yesterday.
Right. So all the facts I have about you are from yesterday, right? So yesterday you were a musician. Are you still a musician today?
Yeah, I'm still a musician. Yeah.
What type of musician are you?
I play a guitar and vocals. I'm an acquaintance of yours. Mario Corrigan would have played with me a few years back.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure, I probably know you. Just, you probably our paths have crossed then, have they?
No, I don't think we have, no. But that'll be my only connection with you. Mario, because I know you were friends with Mario years ago.
We went to school together. And
that's right.
Yeah, we shared a house when we were at college together. And Mario was in a band called Dancing Back to Scratch. Right,
that's right.
There's a bit of history for you, and they appeared on a talent show called Screen Test, which was hosted by Mike Murphy.
That's right.
And Gavin Friday was one of the judges, and he was ahead of his time. This was pre Riverdance days, and he gave a set dancing troupe, which were not unlike Riverdance, the full score. And I think poor Mario and the lads got about 3 out of 10 from. So they, we all went home with tails between our legs back to Kildare. We didn't get anything out of that. Anyway, so what class are you, a wedding band or what are you, Declan?
We're doing a bit of both. We do some pub work and we're actually starting up a wedding band for next year.
Right. Okay. That's a different, you know, different kettle of fish, isn't it?
Different scenario altogether, yeah. Yeah. It's changed.
Yeah,
changed
different set list, different appearance, you know, the whole attitude is different.
Oh, yeah. Definitely, yeah.
But there's a good money in it.
Well, there's a bit of work involved in it, but yeah, the rewards can be good.
Yeah, right. Have you got a name for your wedding band?
Yeah, we're called Midnight Express.
Right, Midnight Express, right. After the movie.
Yeah, but it's something like that. It has to be after something.
Cheery. Yeah. Okay, you're up against Claire Barry. How are you doing, Claire?
I'm good, Ray. I'm good. And you?
I'm good. And you're in Wexford?
I'm in Wexford, yeah.
Whereabouts in Wexford?
I'm in Ballycross, Bridgetown.
Ballycross?
Yep.
Did we just mention Ballycross there? Is that where the...
You did.
We did, isn't that
bad? Yeah.
Because that's the Ballycross apples.
Ballycross apples, yeah, and their apple juice.
Yeah, and they were great. We were down there a couple of years ago at Halloween. Cause
that's right, it's fantastic.
Isn't it?
Super spot.
Yeah.
Absolutely super spot, yeah.
And you couldn't get into it. It was jammers with all the pumpkins, and then they do all sorts of, there's witches and little houses and little villages.
Fantastic, it's so well done. It's a brilliant spot.
Yeah. Ballycross is a small enough place, isn't it, Claire?
Well, it's only one street or one road.
One road,
between Bridgetown and Kilmore.
Yeah, and is that your home place?
No. I'm married down here. I'm originally from the other side of Wexford.
Right. Oh, that far away, huh?
Well, 40 minutes away.
Yeah, what are you up to today?
I'm at nothing now at the moment. I was out this morning, but I'm back now.
Yeah.
Eating me nails because that lad, that's the music fella, he'll get all the answers.
Oh, you don't know, you see, you don't know.
It's
the look of the draw. I'm just looking at
Absolutely.
I'm just looking at my cart wall there. What's ahead of you? Ah, yeah, you'll be okay. You'll be okay. And it's always worth a guess anyway, Claire.
Don't
forget the clues are there as well. So that's important. Any plans for the weekend?
No, I'm going to relax this weekend. Yeah. I was out all this week, so I'd have to stay at home and do something.
Nice.
I might make a bit of jam.
There you go. I'm sort of. It sounds so easy, and the rewards.
I've made a good bit. I've made a good bit already.
What did you make?
I've made some rhubarb and strawberry, and strawberry in its own.
Yeah.
Some plum and some raspberry.
Nice. And the rhubarb and the strawberry. What's that combination like?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Is it? Delicious.
Lovely. Yeah. Really delicious.
Declan's laughing away there. Okay, so we better get on with the quiz then. Three questions each. I give you the category and I ask if you want a clue. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you decide to go without a clue and get it right, you get 2 points. And whoever has the most at the end is the winner. And if it's drawing points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to Declan in Newbridge. Good luck to Claire in Wexford. Here we go.
Good luck, Claire.
Good luck, Declan.
Right, Declan, it's... Naughties boy bands. That's the first category. Naughties boy bands. What do you want to do? Do you want a clue or not?
No clue.
No clue. Okay. Good luck with this. For 2 points, can you name this Naughties boy band?
Because obviously she's out of my
league. That's right.
But how can I...
Say again?
That's right.
Oh, in there straight away. Huh? There's hardly a second of a played. Maybe, Claire, you're right. That's McFly, you're right. Yeah, okay, 2 points for you. Thanks, McFly. Good luck. There you go. We're okay. So, 2 points. It's all about you is the song. Claire, noughties boy bands. Do you want a clue or not?
No clue.
No clue. For not 2 points, can you name this noughties boy band?
Boyzone?
Who?
Boyzone?
No, no.
No.
They were more sort of 90s boy band. Busted. It's Busted.
Oh, God.
Declan, stop now. Did you hear him? I knew it was Busted. Okay. Claire, no, don't panic. It's early days yet. You still have 2 questions to go. Declan, back to you. Second category, film actors. Film actors. Do you want a clue or not?
I'll take a clue.
You'll take a clue. Okay. When something isn't sharp anymore, it could be said to be. That's the clue. And here is your clip. Who is this for 1 point?
Will you read for it quickly? And they just sort of handed me the pages. And I remember I was rushing to catch my flight and I was so scared of being late for the plane that I think I read the audition in a kind of chaotic way. And maybe that worked. And then I remember being back in London in a nightclub with my sister and I got a call from the director and I mean he must have just been like, should I hire this person, because it was just like oof.
Well,
Emily Blunt.
It is. Good clue, and you spotted it there, so you get a point. When something isn't sharp anymore, it could be said to be Blunt. Emily Blunt. Right, now Claire, film actors, what do you want to do?
Yeah, sure, I'll go with no clue. Really,
you go with no clue. Okay. Good luck with this for 2 points. Can you name this actor?
Remember the kids that would have all the smooth and the Nutella and like you'd go around and just shovel it into your gob? I'd always be found in the pantry with a teaspoon in the syrup. Me and my brother would stand on each other and help to get it, even when it could crystallise at the bottom. That stuff was amazing. If it was biscuits, you'd have to either open them first and finish them, otherwise it'd be a huge fight, or it'd be like an old Jaffa cake or something, which is still good.
Who's that?
God almighty, I have no idea. Maybe
Jodie
Foster?
No. The clue was, with Saoirse Ronan and Emma Watson collectively, they were Little Women. Would that have would that have helped you?
Probably not.
No. Florence Pugh. Florence Pugh. She seems to be in everything at the moment, everything I see. Now, that means you can't catch Declan because you can only possibly score 2 points.
Okay.
And Declan's on 3. Claire, sorry about that. We're going to send you out a radar show. Oh, yeah, sorry. Listen, you are in luck, Claire Barry, because I'm going on my holidays. They've said you can give away 2 weekends. So you're getting a weekend away as well. Then the Hendrick Smithfield. There you go. That's nice, isn't it? That's nice. I nearly forgot that, Claire.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That was lovely. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks a million.
Yeah. And we'll send you out a Radar Show Keep Cup. So there you go. Well done. Have a great weekend, Claire.
Thanks, Ray. Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
And Declan, well done. You're the winner. You get the weekend away in the Hendrick Smithfield and you get a Radar Show Keep Cup. So there you go. And it's the weekend. So all good. All good.
Thanks very much.
Well done, Declan. Nice talking to you.
Yeah, you too.
Mind yourself. Bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
5 on 5 5 on ray@rte.ie. I'm just going through the computer here. I have to put that up there and press that button and we're off. Yeah, there you go. That should do it. The Emperor's New Clothes, the late and, great Sinead O'Connor. Alison Spittle.
Hello, Ray.
Are you a fan?
Massive fan of Sinead O'Connor. I think she's incredible. What I love about her is that, she was a very brave woman and it made you feel brave just listening to her. Do you know what I mean? And I don't think I'd have half the mouth I do without Sinead O'Connor, because she was kind of the battering ram. She took it all and she's amazing.
Amazing.
And she's so funny.
Yeah.
Like, people are sharing her tweets and everything. She was very, she didn't give a fig. You know what I mean? That was a great thing.
She was so multifaceted.
Yes.
Because she was mischievous, funny.
Mm-hmm.
She was could be very serious and very courageous.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the music. Like, if she had the music on its own.
Oh, she'd be a legend in itself, but it's like her herself is incredible. And I'm actually, it's kind of nice to be back in Ireland, like, because I don't know. She died and then I was flying over and it kind of felt good to be here.
Yeah.
Because I felt like being around people who knew how important she was, and it's great. Like, yeah, it's lovely to see people outpouring their love for her, you know? It's brilliant.
Now, your new show is Soup.
Yes.
And it's about a serious topic. It's funny, but it's about a serious topic. I suppose that's the best comedy, isn't it?
Yeah, Soup is very serious. I know. It's about CPTSD, which is a thing that I have. And how I discovered I had CPTSD was I kept getting panic attacks all the time. And one of the things you do when you're going for treatment is to say, have you been for any traumas? And about 2 hours later, they were like, ah, that's enough now. Let's say you got CPTSD. And,
so it took you 2 hours to list all your traumas.
All of them. And
and what's CPTSD?
So it's complex post-traumatic stress disorder. And it comes from basically the ins and outs of what happened was, I had a big run of bad luck. So I came home from a gig one night and a man was in my house and he robbed me. So that was very traumatic because instead of like going out the front door, he came into me and he mugged me in my house. That's what happened there. And then I moved to a new house and 2 weeks later, walked in on two lads with crowbars at the top of the stairs. And I know, look, you're putting your head back. Yeah. I know, people can't believe the luck. And then I got flashed like a week after. So it was all of that. But I kept doing...
Poor thing.
I know. And I kept doing stand-up about it because I kept trying to laugh things off. Like that's the way I process things and deal with things. And I did some stand-up about it, and it's weird, like when a situation is happening to you, like when the fella was in front of me, I was thinking to myself, now Alison, remember every detail and make this into a gig, which is a terrible, I'm a bit broken, Ray. Yeah. I'm a bit, not afraid to admit it.
No, but I'm a bit tapped. But most comedians would say that everything is material.
Exactly, and I was treating it like that.
Yeah.
And then what happened was when I went for treatment, I realised that, so you'd go for a memory, one of the treatments for CPTSD is you go for the memory in minute detail until you get to the point where you're most scared. So the bit that I was most scared of was when the man came down the stairs but didn't go out the front door, he came in towards me. Do you know what I mean? I could process that he was robbing me, but when he came in, that was the bit that was scary. So the problem was that I was recalling this to the therapist, but I realised all I could remember was the stand-up routine and not the memory. I know. Every time I come into a room.
You're in therapy, right?
Yeah.
And you're doing your stand-up routine as part of the right.
I know. So, and I'm trying not to do punchlines and everything, and it's terrible.
And you're waiting for a laugh.
Exactly. And then he's going, that was actually very bad. And I'm like, what?
Tough crowd.
So what I wanted to do was... I know.
It's very dark.
But sure, that's the problem with me. Yeah. Not problem with me. What I love doing is like, I love doing comedy about dark stuff. Yeah. Like, I've been to terrible funerals, but had the biggest laughs.
Yes.
And it doesn't negate my feelings. Do you know what I mean? I think laughter should be everywhere. Like, but with this anyway, we were doing with the therapy and stuff. What was I going to say there?
But so you were going through it, and they bring you to the most scary point of
the thing, and then it was like, oh, this is all stand up. So I thought that was interesting, and I'd do a show on that. But the journey of me making the show is like, because I've been doing it for a few months and I'm in a bit of a, like, I'm going to do the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, so that'll be for a full month. So by the time I come to the Dublin Fringe Festival, it will be a very good show. But I won't lie, if you're coming to the Edinburgh Fringe for the first week, it might be a bit weird because I still haven't figured out how to do it yet. Like, how to, like, hold my feelings in, make it funny, because I want to make it entertaining. Like, that's the big thing.
Have you discussed doing this as a show with your therapist?
No.
No.
No, no. I think he'd probably say no. What did I say, Ray? Ask for forgiveness.
Not for permission.
Yeah. I'd say as a medical advisor, he would recommend no. It's like being pregnant on a roller coaster. You don't ask. You just do it, you know? Right.
And how are you now?
I'm good. Yeah. I do feel good. Like, I do feel like I know I'm...
Were the panic attacks, were they, like, completely debilitating?
Oh, totally. Like, it was like, I was... So, I live in London now.
Yeah.
And I have rich friends, and they have very expensive cats. And I was minding a cat for my friend in our house, and it was going up and down the stairs. And the logical side of my brain was going, that's a cat. You can see the cat, it's going up and down the stairs, but the illogical side of my brain was, that's a man. So like, and then the logical side, when you have a panic attack, what happens to me is like, there's a big debate between an illogical side and a logical side. And the logical side was trying to negotiate with the illogical side by going, well, you know, maybe the cats are wearing shoes. Like, maybe that's why you're scared. So it's very, yeah. So like, I am, the panic attacks were debilitating and they're also making my life smaller. Like, that's the annoying thing, because I love doing comedy and the places that I feel most safe is doing stand-up. Like, being on stage, that's where no one can get me. I just feel so safe. It's my safe space, right? So like, I always wanted to, and when I talk it out on stage, it does feel to me like I'm able to like develop it and show it and kind of talk about it. But
what you've described there is sort of CBT, isn't it? Cognitive behaviour therapy.
Yes.
So you have to talk yourself out of it.
Yeah.
So you have to get to a stage where you can convince yourself that this will pass.
Yes, and I'm way better at walking home late at night. I got told I got a fear of men. That's what he said to me, which I found hilarious because I'm going out with a fella for 10 years.
Right.
You know, so that's...
And how is he with all this?
He's very good. He's very supportive and stuff, and he's always been, like, very supportive. And when... Because there was times where, like, I would feel irrationally scared and he would have to, like, go, no, it's fine, you know, and he'd never judge me, and it's, like, actually the perfect person to have...
You were very unlucky, weren't you?
Oh, the lottery of... Yes. I am so unlucky with stuff. But I'm lucky because I, like, love my job.
Yeah.
I love chatting to you. I love, like, you know...
And you're a maid of honour.
Oh, yeah, we told, yes. I was a maid of honour.
Is a maid of honour a bridesmaid? Is that the head bridesmaid?
Oh, that's the big kahuna
Who were you maid of honour for?
Well, I was asked to be maid of honour twice. I've only made it up the aisle once. Right. The first, I can't say much about the first time. Right. She'll probably listen. But my sister Danielle asked me to be her maid of honour. And I knew that the other bride would be coming because I was demoted from chief bridesmaid.
Oh, right. So you had to really put on a good performance. I suppose the first measure of a maid of honour is the hen night.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah. And because I knew the other one was coming to the hen night, I made it the best hen night possible, which was in a place called Butlins.
Oh, Butlins, yeah.
Oh, I'm telling you now, anyone that's organising any kind of hen party and any kind of stag party, and there's a few people that's rough and ready, bring them to Butlins. No one ever gets kicked out of Butlins. They should put that as their... as their thing. It was great. I had a great time. We saw a great band, Ray. Have you heard of Boys Life?
Oh, yeah. Keith and Brian.
Yeah, the super group. The best members of Boys on the West Life Stay at Home.
That's not fair. Keith's a lovely guy.
I know. And Brian's lovely as well. I am being a joke. But I had a great time. And we kept telling them that we were Irish. We kept trying to communicate with them that we were Irish. So we put up Irish flags on our phones. Now, it could have been the Irish flag or it could have been the Ivory Coast.
Oh, yes.
We're not the best with flags.
What's the audience like? Is it all hen nights?
It's hen nights, stag parties, and then just people having the crack.
Stags,
genuinely.
Stag.
Yeah. Because, and it's, and they're all dressed up. Everyone dresses up as different people.
Right.
So we had like, there's a pop star night. I'm trying to think of, there was loads of Mr. Blobbies running around the place.
It sounds like heaven for
genuinely.
If you're on a hen or a stag.
Sounds like hell if you're on a couple's holiday though, right? You know, a romantic
you're
getaway.
In town for the Ivy Gardens and you're working over the weekend and people who are there will see you.
Yes.
And it's great to see you.
It's great to see you. And I'm back
love
in September. Thanks so much.
That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on the way and I'll see you in a few weeks' time. Good luck. I'll just press this button here.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.